Hello, I'm Josh.
And I'm Christy, and you're listening to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast,
where we help you become a family who lives, loves, and leads well. Welcome back to the podcast. We're so glad that you've joined us today. We, as you know, we are honest and transparent here and just getting into the throes of life, and the couple we have on today personifies that. And so we're so excited to have Gabe and Rebecca Lyons on with us today. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
So I want to introduce Gabe and Rebecca first. They really don't need an introduction. The work that they're doing across the country, really across the world, is profound. Gabe is the co-author of Good Faith, and he's the founder of Q Ideas, which is a learning community that mobilizes Christians to advance the common good in society. And if you haven't checked out Q Ideas, make sure that you do that. And then his wife, Rebecca, an author and a speaker in her own right, and she has a brand new book out that we're excited to talk about today called You Are Free, Be Who You Already Are. So as we dive in, I want you guys to introduce one another to us, because I think we're going to get more of a fresh introduction if you guys introduce each other.
Okay, so yes, you've got some of the technical details right, Rebecca. We've been married 20 years now, and
20? That's two decades.
I know, right? We're old people.
We have so much to learn from you.
And but Rebecca likes her coffee perfect in the morning.
There's no control freak still happening here.
Yeah. Gotta have the recovering coffee. She changes her mind when she orders on a menu for dinner.
Especially at least in this drive-thru.
At least two times, which has tested my patience greatly.
The table matters.
But she's quite a creative. She loves interior design and aesthetics and those kinds of things. She's a great mother. And to be married to me that long says a lot about her.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So some background on Gabe is I met him when we were both in the same college at Liberty.
Go LU.
Yeah, good old LU. He was trying to impress me with some off-campus dance moves, and he sprained his ankle. And so when he fell, I did too. But I get those puns from my dad.
So cute.
Oh, my goodness. And so I think the thing about that I fell for him real quick was that we both just had, I don't know, we almost an imagination for just something that we wanted to be a part of in the world. Whatever God was doing, we just wanted to not miss it. And so there was this, you know, and sometimes, you know, when you're young, you want to chase after something, but you can't describe it. But there was a zeal and a fervor there that I saw in him that echoed what I felt. And I think that was just kind of what bonded us at the beginning. Mm. And so we probably even would have told you then that we were not going to take a conventional path. It's required a good amount of faith, and not faith we came up with, but I think Cade's birth early in our marriage just shaped that and informed that. Another thing about Gabe is he's a competitor. So when we were dating and we went to play tennis one day, you know, I'm just slapping the ball around the court, and he's like, do you want to like learn something, or you just hit the ball? And I was like, I want this date to be over.
I mean, come on. You can't just go out there and hit the ball around. Yeah,
I agree.
Work on
I could.
Skill.
I didn't realize we were competing against each other while we're still trying to get to know each other. So anyways, yeah, he loves football, basketball, you name it, tennis, whatever it is. Someone, you know, he's got to win, basically. That's the gist. And I'm fine with it because I grew up playing music. So I'm like, whatever.
You go do you.
I saw when I knew Christy was the one I wanted to marry when I saw her throw a football for the first time. I was like, this girl's got it.
That would not be me.
But I'm not the competitor, so. Okay, and for those that don't know, tell them a little bit about your family and your kids.
So our oldest son now is Cade, who Rebecca just mentioned. He's 16 years old, was diagnosed with Down syndrome at birth. And so that's been a big part of our story of faith and just learning and parenting and all of that. Our next son is 14 now, Pierce, Lions. And then our daughter is 11 and a half, and her name's Kennedy.
We love that. We because of our Kennedy.
Right.
I love it. Well, I want to talk to you guys. Rebecca, I want to talk about You Are Free, because I have been reading this book. I mean, I told you this before, but I've been reading this book like really slowly in pieces because I am doing the work, and it has been, it is hard, and it is so like, but it's so good. And I mean that, like I don't know. I just have connected with it in a way that I haven't in a lot of things. So thank you for writing it. 'Cause I know I've heard you talk about it before too. And I know this was hard and painful to write. Is that correct?
Yes, unfortunately. Yes. I would love to say it was a walk in the park, but typically the experience of the writer, you know, kind of precedes the experience of the reader, I think, you know, just you have to wrestle through some things.
And alone, right? Like
you're
doing it all alone. And now there's a bunch of us, I think, behind you now that are kind of, you know, you forged the path and now we're following behind. And so I want to talk about so you're talking about You Are Free, be who you already are. You talk in the beginning about perfectionism. You talk about being a type A, I love this, control freak, looking for love, running on a hamster wheel of achievement and acceptance. And I am you. I'm recovering you and as well. But you know, you talked about earning love by working hard to fit in, and whatever box people wanted you to check, you know, if that's a Sunday school teacher, if it's your parents, if, you know, a youth group leader, whoever that is. I mean, that was me. It's memorizing the verses because that's what looks good. Right. And that,
right.
And it makes us fit in. But I want to look at it. Now we're moms and now we're raising kids. We're raising kids that are probably have some similarities to us.
Right. Exactly.
So how do we do this? How do we do this and prevent them from walking the path of checking the right boxes that we walked?
Right. And that's hard because, you know, old habits are hard to kick. And I think sometimes subconsciously we want so much to not project what we received that sometimes we can either autocorrect to the opposite extremes where we don't put expectations at all. And we're like, we don't actually call them to live into the gifting and the wiring that God's put in them. And so I've even kind of swung both directions on it in, you know, the 16 years I've been a mom. I think I was pushed pretty hard in my youth. And then for a good while, probably the first decade of my kids' lives, I didn't call them towards something. I kind of let them meander because there was a resistance probably subconsciously of me, you know, not wanting to do that to them. And more lately, especially as they've gotten into their teen years, I'm just reminding them, I'm like, you know, actually you're more than this. You have capacity beyond what you're doing right now. You can learn something new every day. You can read a book, you know, a lot more often than you think you can.
Yeah.
You know, because I do think we're facing a new challenge in our children's generation than we ever faced, which was we didn't have a phone in our hand and we didn't have friends who had phones in their hand. And we didn't grow up as spectators when we were kids, but our kids are growing up as spectators and they're forgetting that they actually need to participate in life and with real people, making eye contact and creating things with their hands. And so I had the benefit of that in my childhood, or, you know, a lot of us did, whether it's athletics or sports or crafts or arts or whatever it was. And I think now it's requiring even more of parents to expect that from our kids and to put the digital device away and to help them create.
But what's hard about that is it takes parents engaging way more than they maybe used to have to when we were growing up. You know, parents would just sort of send the kids outside or they didn't have the option of these things at their fingertips. And so kids use their imagination And it happened. Now it's requiring parents to carve out time in their busier than ever schedules to be super intentional and actually teach their kids. And I think we learned that a little bit with our oldest, Cade, because he was developmentally delayed. One of the things we learned about him was he's only going to learn something if you sit in front of him and you actually teach him it. He's not going to just pick it up by being around other kids as much. You're going to have to show him, you know, how to read a certain word. You're going to have to show him how to open a little straw and put it in the cup. You're going to have to show him how to put a placemat down and set the table. It's going to take that sort of intentional walk beside him and teach him that. And I think that's the new challenge for parents today is, can they take the time and focus and be present enough to walk alongside and essentially retrain their children on what it means to be human? Because so much of our culture is trying to sort of steal that away, not necessarily intentionally, but it's just a byproduct of the air that we're all breathing.
You know, we talk a lot about emotional safety in the context of the home, and that's really from my counseling experience, and we're trying to messily apply that in our own home, but really just being present. And you guys are a lot like us in respect to just doing, and you run ministry and you write books, and I mean, you're making a huge difference. And I know for us, it's hard to balance push notifications and text messages and emails because they're right there at our fingertips as parents. How do you guys do this in your own home? How do you, you know, really just shut down to do presence, if that's a thing?
Well, it's a huge challenge, you know, and I think I struggle with that too. And what I've learned about myself is I have to set some real boundaries, or the inertia of life will keep me from being present, because it's, you know, we're becoming addicted to sort of accomplishing tasks, to sort of keeping the inbox cleaned out, keeping all the text messages and notifications done. So simple things, I've removed Twitter, Instagram from my phone. Turning off notifications, I think, is a really basic, really important thing to do, so that you're not always, because the brain actually wants to empty those out. So I think getting rid of notifications altogether is a really good thing to do, even on your email inbox, so that you don't constantly stare at something that feels like it's waiting on you.
But
practically it means coming home at night and just putting the phone, you know, away. And I know we all talk about that now, like it's like people are starting to go, we got to put them in a box, we got to really have time limits on this stuff. But I think that just takes discipline and practice, and so we're trying to do that. I also, just a new technology that I got for myself to kind of test out the last couple months, has been something called the light phone. And essentially it's basically going back to like a dumb phone, right? Where it's a credit card sized phone that's really great design, but it can't do any texting. It has no smart technology.
That's amazing.
And you know, when you go home at night, you can forward your iPhone to that number. So if people really need to get a hold of you, they can call you and it'll ring that phone and you answer it. So if you go out on a date night, so Rebecca and I go on a date night, that's the phone in my pocket so that I'm not distracted by text messaging or emails, but they actually can call you and you can answer it. And you can call up to 10 numbers. You can, you know, put in 10 numbers, but it's a way to just disconnect us from these computers we now carry around in our pocket.
Are you looking it up right now, Josh?
I already got it pulled up.
He wants
it
so
like
bad.
They're backlogged for months
because
it was a new creation, and their whole intention. And actually, we're having this gentleman speak at our Q event. He's the founder of it. But their whole intention was to say, we want humans to be human. This isn't just a phone. This is about creating more practice in our life that helps us be human.
And I love that it only lets you store 10 numbers. It's basically saying you really are probably only in close relationship on a call basis of about 10 people.
Isn't that so true?
I had a hard time coming up with 10 numbers that I would want on speed dial. You know, it's like I had like 5.
Are there even 10 people I want to call? That's awesome. I love that. We've been having these conversations. Like, this is just the theme. This is the thing that everyone is wrestling with. And I love that it's so freeing to hear, A, we're not alone, and B, like, we are all struggling with this. And it's time to, I think, put some brakes on, you know, and let's reevaluate this. But I want to shift something too, because I want to talk about you two together. I want to talk about you know, Gabe and Rebecca, as you know, you got married, you went off into the world, you knew you, I heard, you know, you wanted to do something, your life was going to be unconventional. I know, Rebecca, you talk about in You Are Free that Gabe met with a guy who kind of helped him discern out his calling and what, you know, wrestle out, you know, giftings and passions and really what he wanted to do in life. And then I loved this part when you talk about Free to Be Called and how he wanted to do the same for you. But you're coming out of a season of, I'm assuming, you know, diapers and cleaning up, you know, throw up and making lunches and all the things. And I loved, I think you just said, like, I'm too, like, it's too much. I'm too tired. I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
The thought of calling feels heavy. It feels weighty and exhausting. So how do we as husband and wife support one another in pursuing that? Because I think that's where the life comes, right? When we get there, and I know you're passionate about that. So can you talk about that, how you guys have been that for one another?
Absolutely. I would say, I remember when he said, I'm going to send you to meet with Pete. And I was like, I don't want to call him. because there was a sense of, you know, obligation that came with that. And to me, but what I think I learned the hard way, the long way, is that calling is not adding to your plate. It's actually mining for what's already in your heart. Hmm. It's been covered over, that's been hidden by roles and responsibilities. And so sometimes I encounter women all the time where they just feel lost. They feel discouraged or defeated or no energy or depressed, anxious, what all those things are. And it's really because we're living outside of our truest self. We're living outside of the birthright gifts that God gave us in the womb and envisioned. And when he knew our days before that one would begin, he knew that the fullest life, you know, in that abiding with him, in that co-laboring with him, would be that we would need to still exercise those gifts. And so calling to me now is just, it's not adding to the plate. It's taking all the other stuff off the plate that should have never been there in the first place. Now, it doesn't mean that we're not supposed to do things we don't want to do. And I have to keep telling my kids that, yeah, you're going to do your own laundry and you'll probably never really love folding or ironing or, you know, I mean, who irons anymore?
Let's Downy wrinkle releaser. That's what we use.
Right. I'm like, refresh cycle. But ultimately, though, whatever work we put our hands to, it should make us come alive in some way. Hmm. Or we need to keep looking. Now, granted, when I was an assistant's assistant and all I did was file when I was 21 out of college, there was a side of me that's like, this isn't feeling like the center of the bullseye yet. I knew that was for a season. And there is, you know, that it would unfold. It would continue to kind of reveal itself. The way we've supported each other, I would say Gabe wake into this a lot earlier than I did. And I watched him, you know, skip off to work and I resented him without realizing it. There was a sense of like, he would call to check in and I would just play annoyed and, you know, like, yes. Oh, it's just been so hard, you know? And,
yes.
And it wasn't for me until about 15 years into marriage. And so here we are at 20, about maybe 13 years into marriage, that I was hungry for it. I was turning 35 and I was ready. And my youngest, like you said, it was a season of 10 years of all the kids being toddlers. And by the time my youngest was ready for kindergarten, I realized, wow, there's a window of time in my day now that isn't already planned out. And there's space here to dig below the surface. And Gabe was very supportive of that.
Yeah, Josh, don't you love it when you're off traveling and you get that call?
Like,
and there's nothing you can do about it, but things are just going miserably at home.
Oh, like when Rebecca, seriously, when you were just talking, I mean, I feel like that is still sometimes me, to be honest.
Yeah, totally.
You go travel and speak and I'm the one, and I say this, like, I have to be careful, especially when we talk about, you know, like to military families and stuff. But I mean, it was my honest experience, but I just felt stuck at home. I felt left behind. I was left there with these kids that you had a very equal part in producing. And I'm the one who has to do all the stuff because you're off and you're having great meetings and working on exciting projects and you're all, and I'm covered in like spackled banana and sweet potato. And, you know,
I actually had to learn, one of the things I actually had to learn to do was when I would go speak, I would, there were times where if I was in a, there was one particular time last year where I was in a marriage retreat. I was actually leading a marriage retreat for Salvation Army and I got a phone call from Christy and I knew it was one of those calls, Gabe. And I actually picked it up. I asked the group, it was a small group, about 10 or 12 people. And I asked them if it was okay. Picked it up and I did. And it was just a neat moment because, we as a group were able to pray for Christy. She was struggling with back issues, chronic back pain while she's watching the kids. And that's been a big part of her story. And but she felt invited into. And one of the things into what I was doing and one of the things that I started doing then every time I would speak is I would introduce our family and then I would say, I'm the one out speaking about it. She's the one home doing it. So would you give her a round of applause? And just to honor her. In a lot of ways. So yeah,
that, like, that still gives me tears. Like, I know you do that, but it really does matter to the, you know, the one who feels hidden or unseen, you know, that you are invited in and you are a part of this.
But Gabe, I get that, man. I get the, the stress when you're on the road and you're feeling it. Like,
oh, we had one issue. Well, actually, that was a serious one. I think he was in Phoenix. And our dog, Kennedy, fell down the stairs in our new house when we had just moved here to Nashville. It was bad.
I had to get a red eye. And we were at Vanderbilt. And yeah, it was
children. Oh, my goodness. I didn't even know where to take her. It was awful.
I think on the, you know, the travel thing, which I realize is definitely not most people's lives, probably, that both spouses are out traveling a lot. But when that's the case, you know, for us, one of the things Pete, who's been the person Rebecca referenced to help me really understand my calling, you know, he kind of looks at these different years and seasons of life. And I know we're talking about, you know, your children, 4 and 2, you know, he kind of looks at the late 20s to mid 30s as the tired years, he calls them, which is, could be a little depressing, but he's like, it's just the tired years. You know, you're just constantly on, you're constantly taking care of the kids. You barely can, you know, stay awake till they're asleep and then you're back up the next morning running after it. And sometimes it helps to at least know that season, as we're experiencing now, does come to an end and your kids are able to give themselves showers and baths and put themselves to bed without you having to be there the entire time. And, you know, you do come out of that. But one of the things Rebecca and I committed with the kids when she started traveling more was we set a night limit of how many nights we were willing to travel. And we really included the kids on that to just say, hey, we care about your perspective and we want to be home a lot. Like, we don't want to be gone a lot. This is our top priority. And so for us, that ended up being 4 nights a month that I can travel and 4 nights a month Rebecca can travel. And we very seldom would both be gone at the same time. And if that's the case, we try to have family watch them or something like that, but that happens pretty rarely. And that's been a good way for us to say no to a lot of things and to just stick to a commitment to one another and to the kids so that they understand that, look, we're going to be here often. And one of us will be with you, you know, every evening for the most part. And that's been a good practice.
I literally wanted to ask you guys that, how you balance that. So thanks for.
Yeah, we've actually been setting some limits ourselves.
Well, and just because you're both doing stuff. And for those listening, like, you, it may be a very different picture for you. It may be, you know, a school teacher or, you know, a bit of pastor or any combination of all of the things. But you're still navigating two people's priorities and hopefully, you know, two people going after the things they feel like God's sort of put in front of them to do in life. And those are the conversations that are hard, is how do you champion one another, but figure out a family balance too, where you're still connecting in marriage. Your family still feels like a unit. It's not just like dad and kids, you know, mom and kids, and they never see the whole unit together. So is there any other ways, like, you guys have found just to balance that, that you can champion one another but still keep that?
Well, a couple things. Our kids are a little older. They just started to this past year where they're all in youth group on Wednesday nights. And our church, we can drop them and we go on a date night Everyone's
bless the Lord.
Tonight.
Oh, my soul.
It is. It's all the stars are aligning. Yeah. We drop them from 6:30 to 8:10 and we go to dinner. So we get a date. They get to sing worship music and have a small group. So that's kind of a given that we need our own time once a week. Mm. Weekends are gold to us. And I mean, I used to almost speak every weekend because my four nights a month would wind up being every Friday night typically. And that changed a year ago or 2 years ago. I was just like, I can't do this. Weekends are gold to us mm-hmm. because that's when our kids are home. Mm-hmm. And so Friday night became family night and I would maybe do one Friday night a month, but would try to move those to more. And I do some corporate things too, which makes it easier now. So I could do colleges or, you know, like you mentioned Salvation, different places like that, that do weekday events. Yeah. So that's been a real sweet shift. And then regarding, you asked that question earlier about what are ways that we can be present, and Gabe will take things off his phone. And for me, what I love, because quality time is still my primary love language, we can talk about what we want to stop doing. And then I think the way I approach it is also, what do we want to start doing that is present? So what do we want to add to our lives and what do we want to take away? So for Lent last year, I felt like God was saying, this isn't about what you're giving up. This is what you're going to add to your life for Lent. Like, what kind of meaningful things are you going to add to your life in this season that are the right things? And so I made a list of like more walks, like a walk every morning, dance parties in the kitchen at dinner, you know, cooking, you know, having more guests over, like spontaneously, and just being outside, being just present with the kids in fun, playful ways, because I can get so intense in the work rhythm that my head is just down. And then sometimes I'm like, when did we actually play together? When did we engage and laugh? So I think at my core, I was a playful, like happy jokester. My daughter is definitely like that. And so it's been sweet to carve space for that. And I think one of my favorite things we do as a family, we just did it last night again, where we sit around the living room together. We don't have a TV downstairs in our living room. So if you want to watch TV, you really have to work for it. And you have to go upstairs and all that. So when it's just hang time though, in our kitchen, keeping room, or like the little living room area, we just sit there and we just talk. Like, we just, all five of us just have conversations about just family conversations. And then if it's on a Saturday morning, we might go through scripture, or one of the kids will lead, but they have as much of a voice in the conversation. They help facilitate scripture or a devotion or a journal entry or something like that. Cause they're old enough now where we just want to keep the communication lines wide open. We always tell them, there's not anything that you can tell us that you're going to get, us pushing you away, or us shaking our head, or us saying, you know, shame on you. Like, you're never going to get that from us. So we just want you to always feel free to say whatever's on your heart. And so that to me is presence in a way that's proactive and nurturing their heart.
I love that so much.
You know, what I really love about you guys, especially, no hit on you, Gabe, but especially you, Rebecca, just your ability to talk about anxiety and fear. Like, you're like being honest about negative emotion and calling it out. And so, but you guys also... Like, you're talking, Rebecca, about inviting spontaneously inviting people over more often, those types of things. And Christy, I'm speaking for Christy here. She's done a really good job of that lately, to get out of her four walls, as she calls it.
I've had to try really hard.
Yeah, it's taken. And so she's even been holding an IF table locally here at our house. And she's getting ready to do that at our church. And so it's one of those. But it's taken time. And she's going against.
Right.
I'm speaking for you, Christy.
Yeah, you're doing a very good job. That's me.
Because she's wrestling with rejection.
Yes,
she wrestles.
Exactly,
right.
Yeah.
And how do you guys? Because, and I heard you, Gabe, talk about this before, how like early on through Cade's journey, you were even in doctor's offices, and you guys ended up, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but writing a book or something for how parents navigate Down syndrome and that kind of thing. Like, you're just intentional about making a difference in the world in whatever you guys put your hands on. But there's fear, there's rejection. Mm-hmm. How do you want to...
There's judgment.
Yeah, on the... Like, practically, I guess is what I'm asking. How are you able to... How have you learned to shut those voices, those negative emotions? A lot of times we replace negative emotion with positive emotion. How have you been able to do that in a way that you can engage your kids, that you can have the dance parties? Because I think that's, for a lot of parents that we hear from, it's that struggle of there's fear, you talked about, Gabe, they're busy, they're overwhelmed. Practically, how have you been able to put those negative emotions aside or replace them?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, for me, it's been a journey of, properly kind of right-sizing other people's expectations. I mean, from an early age, not putting a lot of stock in sort of the critic voice that's in all of our heads. And I would say that was probably great mentors, people in my life from an early age helping me understand how God views me, how he views our work in the world, our desire to partner with him and what he's doing. And that a lot of people don't understand things that you feel called to do. It doesn't always make sense in the moment. And after living a little bit of life, you see that sometimes those things come around and people actually, it does make sense. So I'm still affected by people and rejection. I mean, I think we all, the human heart just, is repelled by that. And it does force us inward. I think that's the great thing about a marriage too, though, is that when you have a husband or a wife where you can know there's somebody you can really talk through that stuff with and that believes in you. I mean, Rebecca's belief in me has just been enormous for so many years when other people didn't understand what I was doing or pursuing or what I'd felt called to. Her deep belief in God's work in my heart and desire to be a part of that and support that is what carried me through many times. But practically, I think then, it's part of just right-sizing life, like not over-inflating our work side of things and how important that is compared with like the time we have with our children. Like I'm more and more as I get older, I'm 42 now, I'm just more and more understanding why people say the next generation's all that matters, because things change so much when we invest in our children and we're trying to have that kind of mentality with our kids that no matter what things Rebecca and I are doing right now to hopefully be a part of God's work in the world, the most important thing we could be doing is really sharpening these children for the new world that they're encountering with all kinds of complexities and questions about how faith intersects with the questions their friends are asking. We've got to double down and do our work on that because that's our most important contribution, I think, for seeing the shift in the future and sort of the advancement of the kingdom as we look forward.
Yeah. When you think of rejection in scripture, you think of the rich man who threw the feast and he put all the invitations out and all the important people he thought should be there were too busy. And so they didn't come. And then the idea was, well, then just go out under the highways and the byways and find anyone on the streets hanging out that seems hungry. And invite them in, and they're the ones, Jesus is saying they're the ones that are supposed to eat. And, I would take things personally, even in our, it's crazy, even in the world of Christian ministry, you can still encounter rejection. And it's unfortunate, but it's true. Mm-hmm. And I'm relatively new to this. And so I kind of came in just thinking that everyone was for everyone. And why wouldn't we be? We're all claiming Christ. We're all on the same team and experience like, no, that's actually not how everyone has treated everyone because we're still human and we're broken.
Yeah.
And we all need God. So there was a kind of a reality check for me. And I think it was more recently, probably in the last year or so, that God's like, just remind me what Jesus said. He's like, I didn't come for the healthy. I came for the sick. And Rebecca, don't write for the healthy, write for the sick. Mm-hmm. And I was always trying to be, because I write in You Are Free, I was performing for love. The approval of man mattered more to me than the intimacy and union with God. And so when I was able to confess that and be honest about it, that's where Jesus was like, okay, now do you see that everything that I've put in you is so that you can do the work that I've asked you to do, not the work that pleases someone else, but the yeah. work that I've called you to. Mm-hmm. And I didn't call you to please the Pharisee. Yes. I called you to go find the person who would believe. Mm. And what I'm finding more and more now is that God, if we let him lead in every relationship or every expression of ministry, whatever that looks like, my prayer these days is like, take me to the ones where there's low hanging fruit, where there's a hunger and a thirst already there, where the seed has been planted and it's been watered. And, you know, and I'm fine being the early person in that process for someone or later down the road, but keep me closer to the ones who have a genuine openness to transformation yes. and a hunger for a life that will become free.
Yeah.
Because I don't really need to minister to those who think they're free and aren't free and could care less what I have to say. Exactly. I think God calls us to be around the people that he puts in front of us. And that was, you know, kind of got loud to me through that parable as a reminder of like, maybe the people I'm pursuing and wanting and desiring isn't actually who God intends for me to be in communion with.
Oh my goodness. That is the most, that's it. I mean, that is what's so, it's so refreshing because I mean, we've all heard, you know, the bloom where you're planted and all that stuff, but,
right.
But for the mom in the trenches, for the dad working the job in the cubicle that he probably hates, I mean, there are people around us. Like, it's like we're looking for these other more, I don't know, flashy, shiny, more impressive people to, you know, be in relationship with. And mm-hmm. it's like we've got these people right around us. And this is where we get to dig in. And, oh, that's just so... Thank you.
No, I'm speaking from preaching to the choir here.
Yeah.
It's something I'm constantly convicted about.
Yeah.
And I've been so blessed, especially even on the road in these last year or two, to just encounter people I would have never known if God had not just literally put them right in front of me. Like the person who picked me up from the airport or, you know, just a random person on the airplane sitting next to me. And it's just like, I'm so amazed by his provision of saying like, I want to put this person in your path today. And I want you to have a real conversation with them. And I want you to treat them the same way you would treat someone that you've known for a decade. And, that has been such rewarding work, probably as much or more than actually, you know, standing on a stage or something like that.
Well, and it's the real work, you know, it's the real, it's the humble hearts that are just looking for Jesus, and we get to be a little bit of that. I just love that.
And guys, I just want to, as we wrap up, I just want to remind people, check out qideas.org. The conference is April 26th through the 28th here in Nashville. You can get registered. I just want to thank you guys both for what you do, because we really believe our calling is more about, it's Dietrich Bonhoeffer, you know, a true test of a moral society is the kind of world that it leaves to its children. And our heart is really about what we're leaving to our children and helping, believing that parents are the primary disciples of their kids. And that's where our heart lies. And you guys are paving the way and having such an impact in society for our kids' generation. And so I just want to close by thanking you guys for what you guys
do. Thank you guys. Thanks for what you guys are doing too. I think your perspective is right on, helping parents like think through these things is there's a shortage of those kind of resources, so we're excited to partner with you in this way.
For more information and resources or to connect with us, go to drjoshandchristy.com. We're also on Instagram and Facebook at Dr. Josh and Christy.
Be sure to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast. Write a review. The more positive reviews we get, the more people learn about it. Tell a friend and be sure to send us ideas, thoughts, and questions you may also want us to cover on the podcast.
It's an honor walking alongside you.
We'll see you next week.